You're listening to All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. This afternoon, Knoxville's McClung Museum of Natural History and Culture welcomed some very special guests. They traveled from Middle Tennessee, but their journey took 700 years. Two stone sculptures, human male and female figures, are thought to be a matching set. They were created by the Native Americans who lived in Tennessee long before Europeans arrived. The statues give us a window to life then, and the man who helps tell their story today is Tim Bauman, McClung's curator of archaeology.
The female was in private hands up until recently, and the university, along with many donations, have been able to acquire that and bring them back together.
How can you tell that the statues were meant to be, or perhaps were created to be mated, as opposed to two statues that happen to look similar and were found in a similar area?
Well, the two statues are quite unique. They're probably two of the best matched pairs in all of the United States, particularly in obviously from the southeastern United States. But what makes them clearly a match is, one, they're found from the same place, from the same site in Wilson County, which is called the Sellers Archaeological Park or site that's owned by the state. Stylistically, they're clearly made by the same person. You have very similar styles in very realistic of their features, crow's feet around their eyes and the sagging chin, clearly they're elders, that looks identical to one another. So they're clearly quite similar.
Well, you've already described these statues visually. Talk to me about their significance archaeologically and culturally. What do these two statues teach us about the people who made them, who lived in Middle Tennessee about 700 years ago?
Well, again, they're very unique, and what they mean is kind of hard to determine, but we have some educated guesses since we're talking about cultures that didn't have a written language to tell us what they thought of them. But what we believe they were is that they probably represented either real individuals, a male and female father and mother figure of the community, or sort of a combination of sort of ancestral beings that represented sort of the symbolic mother and father of their community. And that these objects were found in the ground, when they were put in the ground is somewhat of a question of maybe how they were used during the living society or community there. Were they put in a temple or an altar where people came to and asked for advice? Or were they placed in the ground at the very beginning when that town was settled as sort of a, you know, connecting to that sense of place? Or were they put in the ground as the community was abandoned and had turned it from a living community to a memorial site where their dead and ancestors were all there, they could come back and visit? We don't know, but if you look at the statues, both of them have their mouths open slightly with the tongue sticking out, which represents a sort of speaking. And so these ancestors are speaking to the living. And that's very common, you know, in many cultures of trying to reach out to your ancestors for advice and guidance.
What does it teach us artistically? And what I'm thinking here is that these statues, although primitive in age, are not particularly primitive in their outcome. The folks who created these statues had some mastery of getting facial details, expressions carved into stone. What does it tell us about how skilled these folks were?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. You know, the ideas of the savage Indian and not being as skilled in crafts of metallurgy or whatever, the ideas of not having artistic style and abilities is completely false. And the abilities that they had are clearly amazing and rival any modern stone carvers today in no matter what culture, in my opinion.
Well, as I mentioned, the initial statue was found before the United States got involved in World War II. Franklin Roosevelt was in the White House. It was 1939. So it's been studied for a good long while. Is there anything that we can still tease out from this statue, or is its significance primarily instructional, letting people see it and visitors come see it? Or are archaeologists like you still able to tease some secrets from these statues?
Well, I mean, there's always some new technology that comes out that archaeologists have borrowed or now starting to use and trying to analyze and look at. So one of the things that both these statues do have is actually some pigment or paints, you might consider, but on their faces and body, and as well as the stones themselves. Where did the stones come from? Did they come from a sacred location inside of a cave, from a certain area that they were brought to the site, or were they a local rock? And the pigments themselves, what were the pigments made of? So there are some new techniques using X-ray fluorescence, for example. We have some machines that we actually can bounce some X-rays off that's non-destructive to try to record what kind of rare earth elements, what kind of things that might be in it. It might be a signature of a recipe for the paint or a sourcing method for trying to determine where the stone actually came from. So those kind of things are still part of a bigger question that people like Dr. Jan Schimmick, the archaeologist here who does cave research and cave art, trying to compare some of those pigments to the rock art and maybe these caves or these connected to caves. I don't know.
Dr. Tim Bauman is the curator of archaeology at the McClung Museum of Natural History and Culture. We have been talking about Tennessee's state artifact, a Mississippian statue reunited in the permanent collection with a matching statue formally recognized earlier today. Dr. Bauman, thank you so much for your time.
No, anytime. Thank you.